North Georgia Business Radio presents The Best of Business Radio X. Business Radio X serves as the voice of business in cities around the country. And every day, Business Radio X lets you hear from business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners, allowing them to share their stories of success. I'm Mike Salmond, and today on the show, we're going to share some of the conversations heard recently in our Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett County. Today on the show, some secrets from a top sales trainer on how to get decision makers to say yes. Also, an eye-opening discussion about cybersecurity in the health market. Are your medical records safe? And later on, a big announcement about Business Radio X. But up first, the future is now. Get ready for driverless cars. On a recent episode of Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan, which airs every Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, host Brian Mulligan spoke with Eric Tannenblatt, a renowned lecturer and political counselor, about the future of autonomous vehicles.
What you're seeing is certain jurisdictions here in the United States in particular that have created a climate that has been welcoming towards electric vehicles, have seen the testing of autonomous vehicles more readily than those states that have not shown sort of an appetite for electric vehicles. The best example would be right here in the state of Georgia. In 2015, Georgia was number two in the country in terms of electric vehicles. And then our legislature got rid of the electric vehicle tax credit. We're now at the back of the pack. There was a 90% decline in the sale of electric vehicles in the state of Georgia.
Right.
And as a result of that, we're sort of behind the curve in Georgia in terms of the testing of autonomous vehicles. And you look at what's going on in California or Arizona. Arizona is like ground zero in Phoenix. And again, it was political leadership in the state of Arizona. Governor Ducey, the governor of Arizona, proactively went and recruited autonomous vehicle testing to come to Arizona and wanted to be at the forefront. And I think you're going to see autonomous vehicles. They are already deployed in Arizona, but they're becoming more common. And you're seeing it in Northern California as well. And I think that these states that are the early adopters are going to be far ahead and at a greater advantage than those states that aren't. And the infrastructure that's needed for electric vehicles. It's not just a tax credit. The tax credit was to stimulate the market, but we now need to play catch up and we need to build the infrastructure so that people are more willing to go out and buy an electric vehicle because they're coming. You could look at all the auto manufacturers and they're all producing electric vehicles. And the other thing too is the distance that an electric vehicle, the lifespan of an electric vehicle is so much greater than a combustible engine vehicle. A combustible engine vehicle, their lifespan's about 150 to 200,000 miles. Electric vehicles can go 500 to a million miles.
Right.
So, I mean, that's going to be a paradigm shift. I believe that children born today may never learn how to drive. And if we move to a society where we have electric vehicle, autonomous vehicle fleets, the owner of the vehicle is going to be whoever's managing the fleet as opposed to the individual. So the individual will no longer need to be paying for insurance. Whoever's running the fleets will cover the insurance. However, the insurance costs should decline because there'll be less human error. And so that's going to put more disposable income in the hands of all of us.
How's that going to reshape the insurance environment?
Well, I think it's going to drop insurance costs. There was a study about a year and a half ago by Aon, which is one of the larger insurers, that said that there'll be a drop roughly 30%+ in insurance premiums as a result of autonomous vehicles because of the safety issue. And we talked about that earlier, but if you're dealing with computers talking to computers, cars talking to cars, you know, you're going to have less accidents.
Interestingly, a person gets killed as a pedestrian every 3.6 hours.
Right. The technology is new and people have sort of this fear of the unknown. But I think it's going to become more mainstream, which is another thing that I've told people why I'm such a big advocate for testing and why I think we should have testing here in the state of Georgia. Because I think the more people see these vehicles, like the shuttles on North Avenue, the more they see it and they see that it's real and that it works, I think the more accepting they'll be when they become more mainstream.
Socializing the technology. Get everybody seeing it. Get everybody used to it because it's coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's also a lot less expensive than some of the more traditional modes of transportation that we've been accustomed to. And there's a lot of debate just about every city and state about rail and putting in more rail. And that is such an expensive, very expensive to put in rail. It takes a long time to do it as well, where you can plop down an autonomous shuttle a lot quicker. I mean, this is an interesting, someone told me this the other day, which, you know, sort of blew me away about cars, that combustible engine cars have over 2,000 parts, where electric vehicles have 18. So if you start thinking about shuttles, how quickly it could be, you could actually manufacture a autonomous electric shuttle with a 3D printer.
Right. Yeah, there are some guys doing that. Familiar with that. The other question that when we're talking about autonomous cars, and there's all this various levels and things like that, what's law enforcement going to do? What is your local cop going to do when he tries to pull over an autonomous vehicle? I mean, what happens when he gets there to write the thing a ticket and there's nobody in the driver's seat?
Yeah, I mean, those are very good questions. I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions like that. You hope to think, though, that when we have autonomous vehicles on the street, there again will be technology to figure out who's responsible for that. And hopefully they won't be speeding because they'll be following the laws and they'll be programmed to follow the laws.
Tesla.
Yes, great vehicle. Best car I've ever had.
Likewise. We both drive them.
Yes.
I wasn't a Tesla fan when I bought my car. I bought it because I wanted to experience electric, connected, and autonomous, and was this for real? So what is your experience as an electric, connected, and autonomous vehicle driver?
As I said, it's the best car I've ever had. It's amazing. I've had it for 2.5 years. I haven't been to a gas station. That's a big plus.
Actually, I'm going to interrupt you there because I've got this little story about people who say about the gas station thing. You know, one of the things that people who drive gasoline cars do, they go to this vaguely sketchy, dangerous place that you always feel unsafe in the middle of the night. You put the smelly explosive fluid in your vehicle right next to your children. And somehow you think that that's a good idea and that electrification's not coming at you?
That's right. That's right. And I think that there's another business opportunity too, especially along the interstate. I think someone needs to prepare for all of these charging stations, and charging technology has become so advanced that you could do it quicker. Probably still not as quick as time it takes to fill a car with gas. So, you know, whether it's Waffle House or Starbucks or someone, you know, there need to be places for people to go while their cars are charging.
Right.
It's a whole new business opportunity. But I think back to the Tesla, in addition to not having to go to a gas station and how quiet it is and how environmentally, you know, sound it is, I am just amazed at the technology. And the thing that really gets me is Tesla's really only level 3 of level 5. So it is not even doing all that autonomous vehicles can do. And yet it is so much more advanced than just a regular combustible engine vehicle.
And when you're driving down the interstate, my story is that my wife was in the passenger seat next to me with her eyes closed. And I said, "But dear, you never drive with me with your eyes closed." And with her eyes closed, she said, "I'm happy to keep my eyes closed because there's somebody else looking over your shoulder." And that really is the sense.
It is.
I think there's an extra driver in the car helping you drive.
Absolutely. And you see it all the time. If you move over to a lane, it lets you know. You know, there are so many warning signals. And then if you turn it on to autopilot, I mean, that is just a fascinating technology, especially on the interstate. You just have to make sure you don't fall asleep because because it really does take over the car.
That's all fascinating. Private sector capital, where should I invest my money?
You know, I talked about electric vehicles. They're going to happen. And the battery technology has declined so much.
In cost.
And the technology has improved, too. Yeah. And then the other area is autonomous vehicles. The technology used for autonomous vehicles, the LiDAR technology, that technology has declined in cost as well. So I would look at the if you're talking about investments, personal or from a company standpoint, you know, I'd look at the technologies that are being used for both electric vehicles and for autonomous vehicles, because I think that we're gonna move in that direction. That's really the future.
Yeah, I think I can echo that back, that there's no doubt it's coming. It might be 1 year, it might be 2 years, it might be 5 years.
You know, someone told me recently that it took 30 years back in the 40s and 50s for people to embrace the refrigerator. And I also saw a study that was done in 1990 by a large consulting firm about the adoption of cellular phones. And back then in 1990, we had those bricks, you know, those brick phones. And they predicted by the end of the decade, this would be 1999, 2000, there'd be 900,000 people with these phones. It ends up it was 100 million. And so, you know, if you look 30 years for the refrigerator, a decade to get to 100 million in the 90s with the cell phone, disruption, when it happens fast. And I think that's what's going to happen with electric vehicles.
It certainly seems to be coming. So what lessons can we learn here in Georgia, maybe from some of the things you've seen around the world? So, and what can we do as far as regulation and policy and government affairs, which is your area? What can we do?
There are certain areas around the world where they're moving quicker than we are here in the United States. And there's a lot going on in the United States. And I don't want to sound like there's not a lot going on in Georgia. I just think that given the innovative, you know, nature of our state and the city of Atlanta, I think there's a whole lot more we can be doing. But looking around the world, you know, China is moving very quickly. Yes. And that shouldn't surprise anyone. You know, they've got cars on the road. They've got trucks on the road. You know, you're seeing it in Germany. You could just go around the globe. In Singapore, for example, they were the first country that were testing autonomous taxis. The company that was testing autonomous taxis about 2 years ago, a company called Newtonomy, which is out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So rather than testing those vehicles in the United States, they were testing them in Singapore. Now they're now testing them in the United States. But I think that you're seeing other, and you could identify the countries are the ones that are more technologically savvy and advanced and have the resources are out testing the vehicles. So I think it's going to be sort of a competition as to who's going to get there first. I think we can learn from one another. I think we can learn from what China's doing. We can learn from what's happening in Germany. And they can also learn from what's happening here in the United States, especially in California and Michigan and Ohio and Arizona. Unfortunately, Georgia's not on that list yet.
Not yet, but we're working hard to get at this.
And that's Eric Tannenblatt on Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan, presented by Applied Information and the Travel Safely app. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan. Well, coming up next, do you know if your online health records are safe? You'll hear a discussion that might have you think twice. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Do you know if your online medical records are safe? Can hackers get access to your personal health information? On a recent edition of Leader Dialogue, which airs every Friday at 1 o'clock, host Ben Sawyer, Jennifer Strahan, and Duffy Dixon had an eye-opening roundtable discussion about cybersecurity in the health field with leader, strategist, and change agent Gemini Mikowski.
There's also a push and a presence from the consumer market to say, hey, we want technology. I think, Gemini, you shared with me in the past that there were studies by Deloitte and Accenture when they talk about, hey, what do consumers really want in healthcare? And it's they want personalized care, they want clear communications during their visits, and they want to be treated like a human. And then you also shared with Accenture that they talked about they want access to care, they want appointment management and prescription refills electronically. So we're coming to the point to where a lot of our consumers actually don't necessarily want to be in face-to-face if they don't have to be. She sent me some information to read up on, so I've been studying.
She always has to point out how much she studies.
Are you
getting that?
All the
books she reads. Mm-hmm. It's really...
You're really fortunate to be around me all the time.
I'm watching her head grow, actually, as I'm sitting next to her. It's a fun phenomenon.
Yeah, it is, you know?
That headset's not going to fit much longer, I'm just telling you right now.
I think it's already getting small.
Is it hurt?
Yeah.
And I think to add to that, I mean, you know, Internet of Things, it's really broad, isn't it? if you think about it and you look at what you have in your person that anyone can hack and access, I mean, I'm wearing Fitbit, and Fitbit helps you monitor, you know, your exercise level and all of that. Now we're also going into telemedicine.
Yes.
I mean, all this we're in the virtual world right now. It's kind of,
yeah.
I love sci-fi. I used to watch sci-fi, Star Trek, and when they use those tricorders
to fix them.
Well, we're heading that way. I mean, we've got nanotechnology. We've got all sorts of technology. If you look at the internet, you look at what Apple is putting out there and all these different technology companies. And you're right. I mean, as consumers, we want convenience. And one of the things, and I think it was a RAND study that I read back in 2014.
See, she reads studies, too.
That's why you guys are friends. I'm getting it. It's all making sense now.
And that as sometimes the consumers, you know, they would, the trade-off is, I want convenience, so okay, then I'm going to let go of security. Well, you just open a loophole there.
Yeah.
Can we really prevent it from happening? Not necessarily, but can we mitigate it? I think there's strategies, not just using cybersecurity framework, but actually as an institution, as an organization, what are the strategies that you can execute, understanding your threat landscape that is relevant to you as an institution, your size, your location. We need to think like those cyber hackers, if you will. I mean, what do they want out of you as an entity, as an organization? And how can you make it difficult for them to get that? I mean, mm-hmm. It's really, what is the end game? What are they looking for? And what strategies can we use?
As a healthcare consumer or as a patient, is there anything I should be asking or I should be wondering when I go to my doctor? Or, you know, I know a lot of doctors now say, hey, sign up for this portal and I can send you all your test results. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do that because then the information is on my computer. And if I get hacked and if my information gets out there, I mean, there could be some real consequences because I think the sacred trust between, it's just between the doctor and me.
You know, it's almost scary because I think there's a false sense of security among not only consumers, but even healthcare and just workers. I don't think we realize. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago, Ben. You mentioned whenever the internet kind of first started doing, you could do consumer purchases. You're like, yeah. I'm not putting my credit card out there. Now we do it and we don't think about it.
Right.
But how often do you get emails saying like, oh, this company was hacked and your information, you need to change passwords.
And by the way, I got a call one day from my credit card company that said, did you just check into a hotel in Italy?
Yeah.
I said, no.
I wish.
Unfortunately.
I said, no, I'm here in Atlanta. And they're like, okay, that's what we thought.
We had that, and someone just went to North Carolina. I'm like, man, you're going to do it. Do it right. Go to Italy.
Exactly.
So the way I look at it is our information is out there. If you Google yourself, you know, whatever you do, if you bought a house, your information is out there, right?
Right.
We don't want to live in fear. We know the information is out there. But from a consumer and patient standpoint, maybe one of the things I would ask the healthcare provider is, what are the processes that they have in place? How are they protecting our information so that so I feel safe as a consumer, as a patient, and knowing that the hospital and the medical group, the clinic, has all these control systems in place to make sure that, to protect my information. That's from a personal standpoint as a patient and from what I've read. I mean, there's so much out there and it's so hard to keep up. And technology is always going to be faster than policy.
Mm-hmm.
And even by the time they adjust the framework, things would have already happened. And it takes time to change the framework. It takes time to change the policy. But at least we know, and as a patient, I would know that I'd be comfortable knowing that they do have processes in place to protect my information.
And that segment is from Leader Dialogue, presented by SOAR Vision Group and the Baldrige Foundation. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Leader Dialogue. Well, stay tuned. Coming up next, secrets from a top sales trainer to help close that deal. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the on-air interviews from this past week. Although technology seems to change how we do everything, there's still a need for good salespeople in this world. And that was the point on a recent interview on Case in Point on Business Radio X, as sales expert Al Simon of Sandler Training spoke with the show's host, Rick Strawn.
A lot has changed with technology, with the way people communicate or don't communicate. The prospect knows more about what the salesperson's selling than the salesperson does before the first sales call, because all they got to do is Google it.
Yep.
And it's true. I mean, it's really true. There's so much information available before the first sales call is made. So that's different. Also, people don't return phone calls. People don't return emails because they get so many. And because they're so bad.
Yeah.
That too.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, right? I mean, you get probably a couple hundred emails a day, and
absolutely,
some of those are from salespeople. And, you know, you're, if you don't know who they are, if the subject matter doesn't catch your attention, it's not going to get answered. Even if you do know who they are, you may not want to answer because the timing's not right or whatever. Or in the old days, and you are old enough to remember the old days, you know, you'd come back to the office, and there'd be pink slips on your desk while you were out, and there might be three or four, and you'd call them back. That's what people did. You called them back. That's not the case anymore. So technology, the way people communicate or don't communicate, has changed the whole world of selling. It's so different.
How do you go about changing people's minds on the idea of building that skill set? Because a lot of people think, I know my business. I don't need to be taught. I know what to say.
Well, you really can't change people's minds. You know, we have a saying that you can't make someone buy something they don't want to buy. So that whole thing about selling ice to Eskimos, that's just for jokes and, you know,
yeah,
fairy tales. But a serious professional sales conversation is helping the prospect discover what they want and need to do, and then helping them to take action in the short term. In other words, leading the dance, the dance that includes discovery and the dance that includes taking action. And that's a skill set that has to be built, because it's not innate in most people. You know, getting other people to make decisions in a decent time frame is not an easy skill, or one that just shows up in people, not often.
And that is a skill. What I tell people is, I'm not a salesperson. I'm a cop that owns a business that knows what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And we go from there.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is basically a sales technique. And I don't even think of it that way when I'm doing it. It's just the truth for me.
Well, your clients don't want to spend thousands of dollars on your company, right? That's not the way they think.
Exactly.
But they have a need. They want to protect their assets. They want to protect their people. And maybe a construction site, they want to make sure things don't get pilfered. I mean, there's a whole bunch of what we call pain that are the reasons why your clients buy from you. They don't buy from you because they want to put a whole bunch of money in your pocket.
Exactly.
That's not the way people make decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But isn't technology and e-commerce making the sales profession kind of obsolete now?
You know, some so-called pundits would make you think so. I do believe this, Rick. I do believe that in 5 years, 10 years, there's going to be a lot fewer sales professionals than there are today. I think that most of the retail jobs are going to go away. I mean, the Amazon, eBay thing is real.
Yep.
It's real. E-commerce is very strong. But those are transactions. Those are people that are going to buy because they already know they have a need. In the business-to-business world, in the true world of professional sales, I believe there will still be jobs for the best of the best, no matter what.
What is it you say, that people buy from the people they trust and trust from the people they... How does that go?
All things being equal, people buy from people they trust or whom they perceive are like themselves. All things not being equal, people still buy from people they trust or whom they perceive are like themselves. And it's true. When you're having a serious professional conversation about fairly high ticket items, probably more in the business-to-business world, sometimes in business-to-consumer, but not as often, you're going to have that give and take. You're going to have that questions and answers and discovery and dig into it, and that's not going to happen over the internet. It just doesn't.
A lot of people think they know what they want, but they don't really necessarily know what they want.
And marketing professionals are really good at making products and services sound good on a website. You know, one of my clients called me up not too long ago, and she said, I have a problem. She said, I have a prospect who's looking at my website, and they're looking at my competitor's website, and they both look really good. In fact, they can't tell the difference between their products and service and our products and service on the websites. But they do know that we're like 50% more. And they're asking me, how are we different? I thought that was a perfect example. You can't expect at that level of professional selling to get people to take action in your favor if you're premium priced, and there's reasons why you're premium priced. Those reasons are very hard to show up on a website or a brochure or a spec sheet or a white paper. You have to have a conversation, two people talking it through.
Yep, a good, solid communication, which is really what your business is all about, is communication.
Most of it. It really is. We talk a lot about communication, how to communicate well, how to actively listen to the prospect and read what's being said or not being said, ask good questions. I mean, there's just so much of it has to do with developing that bond, that rapport with someone so that the communication flows. And at some point, the prospect has that aha moment that, you know what, I'm going to buy from Rick. Because people buy from people. Companies don't buy from companies. People buy from people.
And a relationship starts the first time that you sit down eye to eye with somebody.
It does. Or at least phone to phone, ear to ear.
Or at least phone to phone, yeah.
Yeah.
But the communication, a lot of people think communication is talking when, as we know, communication is mostly you listen to what people really are communicating to you.
It is. And these days, a lot of people like to use email or text in selling activity. And I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm saying you better pick your spots. Because words on the screen are excellent for things like confirming appointments or sending messages to multiple people at once or sending a link or a document to somebody. I mean, there's reasons to use text or email in business, in selling. But if it comes down to how am I going to get this person to see that they should buy from me, that better be a discussion and not an email or a text.
No, I totally agree. I've got people that seem to spend all their time on text. And it drives me crazy because you lose all the tonality. There's no understanding of what the person means necessarily. It's just written words.
Yes. Building a house with only a hammer.
Yep.
Good luck.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yep. Good luck. Something's not going to work.
Exactly.
How do you get started with Sandler? How do you make that decision on what you need?
Sales is hard, right? So there's an awful lot of stuff that we do that has to do with psychological kinds of things. Having said all that to say, we don't do one-time events. For our clients, it just doesn't work. It's a waste of their time and money and a waste of our time, because you know how it goes. They get all excited, they have a new toy, but 2 weeks later, a month later, 3 months later,
the new wears off.
They're not doing it anymore, right? They're back to what they used to do, and because they haven't kept it sharp. And so we believe in reinforcement. We're really into reinforcement. So our clients are with us for longer periods of time, where we mix up training and coaching and reinforcement tools over that period of time. And we call this the adult, we don't call it, psychologists call it the adult learning model, that adults tend to become aware and then work through the difficulties and then assimilate and then own the concepts over time as they're learning them, putting them into play, building on them, learning more, putting them into play, and it just keeps going. And that's how skills are built. That's what we do.
Well, and sometimes skills are all about habits. And the old saying is it takes about a year to go through the breaking of a habit, the training, and acquiring a new habit. So to change habits and for something to become a habit, generally it takes about a year. It
takes a while.
But you don't just talk about it. You talk about the why it works.
Exactly.
And the why it works is probably more important than just here's the process. I would say that's probably the best thing that you do, as far as that I've seen, is you explain the process, and it makes sense.
Yes, and someone recently said that most sales training teaches you what to say. Sandler teaches you how to think. If you don't buy off on why you might use a particular strategy or tactic, then it just becomes memorization. And the problem with memorization in a business conversation is that, you know, every single context is different. There's no two business conversations that are sent. They're the same ever, as snowflakes and fingerprints. So you can't be so rigid to be memorizing scripts. So instead, you have to understand the why behind the what. so that you can say whatever you need to say or ask whatever you need to ask or simply use silence whenever you need to use silence.
Shut up when you need to.
There's that, because you understand what's going on in the situation.
Well, I know when I was younger, I sold, I won't name the name of the company, but it was an accident insurance company. But we had to go through and we learned and we memorized an amazing amount of stuff. But it was all scripted. It was all right down. Even the rebuttals for whatever they said they don't need or whatever. Yeah. Everything was scripted. And you had like, you know, 100 rebuttals that you... It began to just kind of all seem the same. It's hard to have a passion for something like that when it's just memory work.
Yeah. And rebuttals are an interesting thing because we always say that the only person who can overcome an objection is the objector.
Exactly.
It's not the salesperson. And so your job is to help the objector to understand why their objection is not valid, or if it is valid, how to mitigate it.
If you were able to turn back the clock, what would you do differently?
Let's see.
Or should I ask that?
There's Mary Ann in the second grade. No. No, I think.
She's now worth $1,200 million.
I knew I shouldn't let her go. You know what? I'm not sure I would have changed anything, really. You know, we all make mistakes in our careers, and we all make mistakes in dealing with people, and you shouldn't look back necessarily. But to answer your question, I think if I could have started on my business earlier, there's so much in my corporate career, those 24 years, that are valuable to today. Because those are lessons that I can take forward. You know what I mean? And so I don't want to say that I should have, you know, done sales training right out of college, because I wouldn't have had any war stories. I wouldn't have had any experiences and, you know.
You wouldn't have had any of those lessons that you learned.
There's that. I wouldn't have those, yeah. So, and I don't regret those years. I don't. They were valuable years. I'm not sure I would change anything, but if I did, it would be maybe not 24 years in, maybe more like 15, 16 years in, I would have started my own company.
And that's Al Simon and Rick Strawn on Case in Point, presented by Paradigm Security Services, a show that airs live every Wednesday morning at 11:30 on Business Radio X. If you want to hear the entire interview, go to businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and click on Case in Point. Coming up next, Here We Grow Again. Some good news for the Gainesville and Hall County business community. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Well, here on our final segment, some exciting news to share with the business community in Gainesville and Hall County. Business Radio X is opening a brand new studio in that area, and on a recent interview for North Georgia Business Radio, my co-host Stephen Julian and I got to speak with the man leading that effort, Gainesville business leader Bo Henderson. Digital media, 180 million people these days consider themselves online audio users. It's just growing, and it covers social media, digital media, podcasting. You're jumping into the business now. You have a background of doing podcast and radio on WDUN up there in Gainesville.
Right.
So this is not new to you, but talk about why you decided to open a Business Radio X studio, not just as a business, but then why did you open it in Gainesville, Georgia?
In Gainesville, well, there's a couple things. One, I've run a business in Gainesville for 16 years now, and I realized the importance of people knowing what the businesses are in our community and what they're doing. And if we don't know that, we don't help highlight that. I've seen some good businesses or good people with good ideas kind of go through the wayside by not working together, and I realized the importance of that. And then what happened is, through doing Business Radio X shows, doing the Rich Life show up on WDUN, I realized that there was a lot we could do to promote, get to know, highlight, let the community know what was going on. And lo and behold, when we start knowing about each other and building relationships, we can start working together and really put that message out there and raise awareness that business in our community is what makes the community go around.
Now, we haven't opened the studio yet. You have not opened yet.
We're going to officially do an official launch in January.
Okay. Well, there's a little connection here between you and Brenau University. Talk about where the studio is going to be located and the relationship with Brenau.
Well, we were talking about where to locate the studio when I knew we were going to open the studio in North Georgia. And it reminded me of a conversation I had probably several years ago when Dr. Turner, you were starting the early on the incubator with Lanier Tech. And so what would be a better place to host a studio than a place that promotes, highlights, grows, launches businesses, and is very connected with other media and things like the chamber and the community? So that's really, we started a conversation. I went in to talk to Dr. Turner, and he said, you know what, I've been looking to get in touch with you for a couple of years now, and I'm glad you came in to talk about this. So it just seemed to be a fit.
Really? I was going to ask you, Dr. Turner, when he came and said, I want to open a Business Radio X studio, I'm thinking your first thing would have been, what's Business Radio X? But talk about that. He says you kind of maybe had some ideas of doing something like this.
I did, and it goes back years, because this is just, Bo's right. The community needs to know what's going on with business launches, et cetera, et cetera. And what better way than to do it with radio?
So many great businesses that are out there, like Milton Martin Honda, that, you know, and Mark, you could probably attest to this. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is that even still around, or WSB Television out of Atlanta, they're not going to come up and talk to you about your business unless usually there's a scandal or the place burns down or something negative.
Yeah, they don't tell the good things, right?
Right, and
yeah.
So here's an opportunity for us to talk about all the great businesses that are serving Gainesville, Georgia, well, all of Hall County, actually.
You know, and I think that's a great example, Mike, is say I'm listening to Mark today, and I hear all the good, I'm looking to buy a car, and I hear all the great things they're doing in the community. That might just be that thing that says, you know what, maybe I should go over and have a conversation and see what they're all about. So I think not just the business aspect, but really letting people know what these people behind the businesses are all about and what they're doing. I think it's crucial.
And I think, obviously, when you're in the incubator, there's going to be a stream of potential people to bring on the air and talk to. I think when you look at a company like Milton Martin, kind of a flagship company,
right,
been in the community a long time, doing great things, that's obviously the type of company you want to talk to. What's in between? What are some of the businesses in between those types that you would like to spotlight and highlight on Business Radio X?
Well, Stephen, it's funny you say that. On the way down here, I was talking to Dr. Turner, and I was saying, you know what? Really what I want this to be about is to give a voice in the community to everything from our local employers with thousands of employees, some of the executives there, to let us know what's going on, what's coming up, down to that guy at the incubator that just came in with his idea that really needs that mouthpiece to let people know what he's working on. So to your question, it's there, and everyone in between, I think, is valuable.
So I'm going to ask you a question and let you pontificate a little bit. Word of the day.
Okay.
I get a quarter from somebody for that. Mike asked Mark the question about WSB, and hey, they only show up and when something's burning down. But even that, it goes on the air and then it's done. When a business comes
don't,
on.
Don't get any ideas, Mark.
Yeah, no, right. I was just thinking. We got a spare building there. I mean,
we didn't mean that.
When a business comes on to Business Radio X up there in North Georgia and in Gainesville, what's their experience going to be like? And what are they going to get? What are they going to receive out of that?
You know, it's one of the things that I realized in my core business, the retirement planning business that I've done for so long, is that there's this idea of sales, right? A business has to have sales to generate revenue. But what I learned a long time ago, and what I've really developed over the years, is this idea of what I call resource marketing. And what that is opposed to hard selling somebody something, let me create content, let me educate people, let me be that content creator that makes people say, hey, I would like to work with you because you've been a valuable resource to me. And I see Business Radio X an extension of being able to do that for our local businesses. So somebody comes in, they are going to be the star of the show that day. It's all about you. It's what you're doing good. It's what we want to let the community know. And then we can support beyond that. Is not just, okay, here's some content you can use, but how do you use it? How do you use social media? How do you use this piece of audio equipment to get it to a customer that might be the thing that they hear and say, hey, you know what? I want to go talk to this guy.
Right, and if you're reaching people through their phones these days, that's where you want to be. And
right.
I know Business Radio X gives you that opportunity. So if I'm a business now, I'm a business leader, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm up in Hall County, and I'm hearing all this that you're saying, I'm going, this is awesome.
Right.
I want to be on this guy's show. I want to be on Business Radio X. How much is this going to cost me to come on and share my story?
$499.99, right, Mike? Bo, you answer that.
Yeah, it's a very exclusive group. So we started $1,000. No, I'm just kidding. No, absolutely. We will never charge to highlight a local business on Business Radio X on our show.
And that's why, and I know in all our other studios, we're very aligned with the chamber up there. So I'm sure you've already had some conversations, I'm sure, with the Hall County Chamber of Commerce. Because our mission's very similar. We want to serve businesses.
Right, exactly. And we're working with Kit Dunlap up there to be involved with this and highlighting those local businesses.
And yours is going to be branded. The studio up there is not going to be the Gainesville Business Radio X. You're North Georgia.
North Georgia Business Radio.
Hall County, even outside Hall County, White County. I mean, there's some businesses that you could serve.
That's right.
So when can we start hearing some of your programming? When do you think you're going to be launching?
We are going to officially launch early January. So as soon as we have that launch date, I'll be putting it out online, North Georgia Business Radio, and letting people know. So you'll hear about it, but let's plan on January for an official launch.
And that's Bo Henderson talking about the new Business Radio X studio that will serve the Gainesville and Hall County business communities. Well, that's it for now. Business Radio X lets you hear from the top business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners in their communities, allowing them to share their stories of success. Today's interviews were just a few of thousands that you can hear anytime, 24/7, by visiting the voice of business, businessradiox.com.